Welcome to the Chief of Anything podcast, in this four-tone, vier-klang format with Catherine Wütz and Dominik Klimek. Our vier-klang format talks about the interplay of purpose, vision, values and strategies, and about what happens to companies when we bring these four together. Here, I hear firsthand how the vier-klang strategy has transformed companies and what I can expect from its implementation.
Hello, Dominik. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic today, Catherine. How are you doing today?
I am fabulous and I am very, very excited because today with us on the podcast is Jan-Michael Holzberg. He is currently the Chief Commercial Officer of Vodafone Oman and has had lots of experiences with the Vierklang model of purpose, vision, values and strategies. Jan, great to have you. How are you today?
Hi, Catherine. Hi, Dominik. And Mahaba from Oman. I'm doing great. Good to be with you.
Fantastic. It's so good to have you here. And Jan, before we start talking about who you are and what you do, would you like to share with us your favorite story of the Vierklang model of purpose, vision, values and strategies?
Definitely. Look, it had a big impact also on who I am as a leader and my career journey within the Vodafone Group. And, you know, I think the first touch point that I had was in 2008, when I moved from Germany to Qatar, a neighboring country of Oman here in the Middle East. And that was quite a daring thing to do at the time, because I actually joined a startup. So the Vodafone Group was in 2008 invited by the leadership of the state of Qatar to bring competition to the state of Qatar and basically to break the monopoly and basically create Vodafone in Qatar and really not only bringing competition to the country, but really allowing the country to leapfrog from a technology viewpoint, from a best practice viewpoint, and bringing the world, bringing the best in class to Qatar. And maybe I can start with the first touch point. You know, I turned up for the interview. You know, it was a sandstorm. It was gloomy. My wife joined me, and we kind of said, "Oh my God, this is really a bad idea." You know, we don't want to be here. This is maybe you know, not what we should be envisaging from a career journey perspective. And then I turned up in that temporary office. There were only six people there, you know, at the time. And I spoke to an HR person and she said, "Okay, listen, you're going to meet the CEO now." And I said, like, "What now?" You know, that's not really something I had even be in my mind or that I was prepared for. And before I knew it, in suit and tie, you know, with 50 degrees outside, I was sitting in front of an Australian gentleman, Graham Maha. And the first thing he said to me was basically, "Lose the tie, get to work." So we had like a short interview where he was quizzing me on my capabilities and whatnot. But after a very short period in time, he welcomed me to the team and we started talking about the purpose. So purpose in terms of meaning was something I had been exposed to before in my career up to 2008. But really in terms of a structured foundation to build a new business, that was a first touch point. So everything in that interview already that we talked about was led by that purpose that he had formulated with a team of brand experts and strategist. And that purpose was making a world of difference for all the people in Qatar. And let me stress that aspect around all the people, because it was really a really important aspect. If you think about it, at the time, before we really started the operations in Qatar, the monopoly, so at the time, Qtel Qatar Telecom, so the incumbent, if you wish, was really providing services for the minority in the country. Just to give you a feeling, about 80 to 85% of the population of Qatar is foreigners. So you have largely a workforce from South Asian countries, India, Bangladesh, Nepal, Pakistan, and also lots of Filipinos that work in the service industry, and a relatively thin layer of locals. However, the telecoms operator was Arabic-led, and from a services perspective, what was very much geared towards that local population. So essentially the majority of the people in the country didn't really have a service offering. So setting up a new business with a clear purpose to bring competition and to bring the latest of technology, but really to making a world of difference for all the people in the country, as a purpose, you know, really beyond making money. I mean, of course, we were there to create return for the Vodafone Group and to create return for our local investors. But that purpose, you know, was immediately exciting for me because I knew I was part of something big, part of something completely different from what I had been working on in Germany and the UK before. So like at interview stage, he already got me hooked on that, and I convinced my wife to make the daring move to Qatar. I don't know. Would you like me to talk a little bit about the vision and the strategies and the values as well, or you know, yeah?
Sure. Go ahead.
One more question with the purpose. What impact did it have on you? Because you said that you went there with the wife. It was a sandstorm. Yep. You're almost saying like, I don't know what I'm doing
here.
I don't want to be here. This is a really bad idea. Yep. And then you're talking to Grandma, the CEO at that time, and he somewhat has inspired you in that conversation with the purpose. Can you talk a little bit more about this? Like, what was so inspiring about this, like dealing with somebody or dealing with an organization that is purpose-led?
So look, essentially already during that first touch point, which was that interview, it is a completely different reference frame, right? Because you're coming there, you're thinking about yourself, you're thinking about constraints, you're thinking about pragmatic elements like salary or, you know, what will be your lifestyle in that country or what does it mean for your career. So my attention was on aspects that were completely, you know, self-centered or very transactional and maybe also a bit petty. And so from the first minute of that interview, talking about the purpose, really, you know, Graham teleported me into a completely different context. And that mindset that you start thinking about, okay, you know, I don't understand yet the details of what I will contribute here in this country, but I do understand already I'm part of something big. I'm part of something that does not only make a difference to the business, but it will make a difference to millions of people in their lives. It does something to you. You know, you spoke about inspiration. I would actually call it excitement. Yeah. And of course, it's not only the purpose, but combined with the energy of the individual and, you know, the, I would say, commitment and the respect. I think respect was an important factor because Graham had this incredible capability of building rapport, basically with anyone. I can talk later on how he did this with Qatari sheikhs and whatnot. But after, I would say, half an hour, I felt like I had known this person all my life. He understands my capabilities. And, you know, I felt valued, if that makes sense. And I think the purpose and the clarity on the purpose made a big difference already at that stage.
That is incredible. And that sounds, I mean, I'm inspired already and energized and excited as you're talking about this. So what I'm really curious about as well, now you said, you know, this was very energizing for me. It got me excited about this.
Yep.
Did it have the same effect on all the other people working there as well?
Yeah, look, okay. So I think from a marketing perspective or commercial perspective, I was basically the first person to be onboarded. Yeah? So, and it was also incredibly fast. So I joined that team a week later. And if you think about Vierklang or PVVS, of course, it's fantastic if you're creating a new business. And clearly, I think what Graham at the time understood is that he was able to find here a like-minded person. Then you can expect that once you understand the benefits of, you know, a clear setup of the business with purpose, with vision, with strategies, yeah, and values in particular, and you find, although I didn't have the academic foundation on the Vierklang at that time, but I think he knew that I would be someone who would take that forward. Every single decision that I personally took as part of the leadership team afterwards, when recruiting, when onboarding, when dealing with conflict, making business decisions, I will speak about that also a little bit later, was basically inspired by that, purpose-led way of working. So a clear yes to your question, because I would say almost immediately I became an instrument as part of the senior leadership team of that business to pass it on. And I think this is really, really important. We can discuss this later as well about a successful implementation versus an unsuccessful one. So if you have sponsorship from the top and you have a senior leadership team that not only understands purpose-based leadership intellectually, but really lives it every day and implements it in everyday leadership decisions, that really makes a big impact. And so how you source, who you onboard, and how you manage performance needs to be in the context of the Vierklang. If not, it's basically senseless. It's just words on a wall, if that makes sense. So absolutely yes. I would say through me and others, Graham created a ripple effect that in the end affected everyone who would later work in that organization, up to 400 people, you know, from essentially him as the CEO. But also if you would encounter at the time, you know, the Yemeni receptionist, you would get that kind of impression that is aligned with the values he formulated. Maybe we talk about these in a second.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would love to talk about all these things, like build rapport with sheikhs and like business decision that are purpose-based and successful versus unsuccessful leadership. Before we go there, I would love to know, what was your vision that you created back then? What were you guiding towards?
Look, again, we need to see this in the context of a new business and a business that needed to break a monopoly and that would need to scale fast. Yeah. So basically, when I joined in September 2008, we had a mandate to launch the operation in March 2009. So basically, in between onboarding staff and building sell sites formulating propositions and opening stores and having a website, etc. It was an incredibly short period in time. So formulating the vision, so basically where we want to be, was super important because the team, of course, was very preoccupied with these immediate and urgent activities that they had to do to bring the launch to life. And the vision was to become the number one brand in Qatar in 3 years. Now, this is really interesting because Vodafone elsewhere had formulated something like best in customer service or, you know, best telco brand. But the choice to say number one brand was conscious because particularly for me as a marketeer, when we built the foundation of the propositions, were clear that we didn't want to compete in telco, but that we really wanted to think about the two aspects of consumers, the head and the heart. So for successful brands, it's really important to build that emotional engagement as well as the functional engagement. So, you know, better price, whatever. I used to say, to refine that vision, that daring vision, this big, hairy, audacious vision a little bit more, bigger than Qatar Airways, you know. But Qatar Airways at the time, and still today, you know, is not only one of the most known Qatari brands, but also the most beloved or most admired Qatari brand. And we set out as a mindset to say, in 3 years, with all of the diversity that we bring, with all of the experience that we bring, with the people, with the strategy, with the Vierklang, if you wish, we aspire to be the most admired brand in Qatar. And you can imagine, you know, how daring and how exciting that is and what that does to all of the functional experts that you're onboarding in a startup.
And I would love to know, because this must have been in 2011, did you become number one brand?
So we did, and we did in terms of customer satisfaction. So, you know, classical net promoter score. So how likely is it that you are recommending, your service provider, eventually, become the brand of choice in comparison to the incumbent. So that we did achieve. So in terms of brand matrix, so Vodafone also had a brand measurement system. We never became really like the most prominent brand. Yeah. But in terms of that emotional engagement aspect that I mentioned, we definitely hit the KPIs. So whether or not we eventually, you know, became bigger than Qatar Airways, I will leave that to others to decide. But definitely from a marketing toolkit perspective, so from a brand measurement perspective, we achieved what we had assumed. And this was a product of not only the propositions and the way we launched the brand in the country, which was distinctly different from what, you know, they had seen for any other brand, not telco, but also the way, and let's talk about that in a second, because I think that is very much Vierklang inspired as well, how we built the propositions, which was super disruptive. So I would say we achieved the goal. And also, you know, the daring nature of it was definitely the right choice in terms of the focus and the attention of everyone in the in the company.
That is brilliant. So Jan, first of all, congratulations for having achieved that BHAG, that big hairy audacious goal, right? That you guys set out to do. Fabulously done. So you've already said it, you know, how the heck did you do it? How did you build that proposition? How did you make it happen?
Look, I think what has really inspired me back in Qatar, and I think this is an aspect of implementation of purpose, visions, value and strategy, is how it was embedded in every single business decision. So, and let me get back to the point of resourcing. Yeah. So particularly if you think about the cultural aspect, so about the values aspect, traditionally, when you think about hiring, certainly in Germany, or at the time, you know, the background where I was from, both HR, but also, you know, the hiring managers would very much emphasize the importance of functional competency and, of course, also experience. Yeah, so you look into the CV that is submitted, you maybe put a little bit of a case study to the candidate, and then once you are confident that that individual, she or he, you know, has the right credentials and, you know, years of experience in a relevant field, you take a decision. Now, asking someone to relocate into like a completely new cultural environment, asking someone to move maybe from an established business into a startup, which has a completely different dynamic in terms of speed and requirements and so forth, of course requires that you need to think beyond just functional skill and experience. You know, that's almost a hygiene factor. Yeah, but you need to make sure in that fast moving environment that you have someone who actually clicks in terms of the values, yeah, and that buys also into the idea that you are coming to work to serve maybe a bigger idea than just, you know, making money. So what really inspired me was, and I did put it into application, that if we in the end had to take a decision between candidate A or candidate B, we always emphasized cultural fit over functional fit, potential and cultural fit over functional fit and experience, because we knew that a lot of things that we were doing, we were anyway doing for the first time, and we needed talent that would, you know, come onto the same journey. And we knew that someone who would be aligned from a cultural perspective and who would have the potential to grow also beyond the individual functional experience would be much more apt, you know, to deliver what we would expect in the startup environment versus someone who says, yeah, I've done it before, you know, I have the recipe, etc., etc. So for me, applying the Vierklang model, if you wish, not only as something nice and cozy and fluffy and, you know, inspirational, as you said before, Dominic, but as something that serves for decision making. So we took decisions against candidate A that would have a superior experience, but for candidate B that would actually be compliant with the potential that we would see for the role and the values fit. Let me talk about the values a little bit, because they might be a little bit different from, I don't know, what you guys have been discussing with other businesses right now. So we had at launch or prior to the launch, three values, and these were vitality, can do, and worldliness. I think very unique, and again, equally daring for like a business that is profit orientated. The worldliness, if I start with the last one, was actually really important. So if you think about the diversity of the country, not only in terms of people, but also in terms of culture, and our opportunity to differentiate as a corporate against the incumbent, yeah, bringing people from various different backgrounds. So we had over 40 different nationalities and a multitude of cultures and characters allowed us, of course, to build that foundation for differentiation. So worldliness, which for me is almost an expression, what now we would say diversity, but a diversity that is beyond gender and behavior, but basically saying we bring the world to that country, was fantastic. Now, can do. It's kind of obvious for a startup, but you'd be surprised when you do these interviews, you know, and you have people that talk a lot about we did this, we did that, you know, that lecture you how things work academically. But honestly, that's not someone you need in a startup. Yeah, in a startup, you need someone who rolls up the sleeves and works. So can do on top of functional experience is really important. And I think you get the gist. if you have to do a launch in like, 6, 7, 8, 9 months maximum, vitality and I would almost say also the stamina to work 24/7 and to enjoy what you're doing is really important. Yeah, this is pointless if you hire people that don't fit. And implementing this in sourcing, I think, was a key aspect of the success, because in the end you could also then count on everyone who was onboarded to not only live the purpose but also, you know, to be a promoter and to be, if you wish, a role model of the purpose. So that was, I think, really key factor to success.
It's so interesting to hear, because when I put myself in the shoes of like anybody who's hiring, and I have a candidate who is like really skilled, for example, in sales.
Yeah.
They're like, oh yeah, I can sell a lot.
Yeah.
And then you feel, okay, that person might be a little bit egocentrical, doesn't fit to our values, but I can see like he gets the job done. It might be a little bit toxic for the team, but he seems to be a good salesperson. Then you would recommend not to hire that person. Hire somebody who has less experience and fits to the values, because this person will grow in the role.
100%. And Dominic, if I may, it was more dramatic, because we hired a really valued colleague from the Vodafone world into Vodafone Qatar in beginning of 2009, when we started, you know, preparing also for the retail launch, a really experienced individual. And it's interesting that you mentioned sales, because this was one of the, I think, defining moments to test the purpose, because one colleague of mine hired that individual that I'm referring to, but I make it short. The CEO personally, Graham, fired the same individual 6 months later. Now, I will tell you why that was, but I tell you why this is a big deal. Now, you need to put yourself into the shoes of the individual. Yeah, you are excited. You are a well-achieved sales individual with a strong success record in terms of acquisition and, you know, building teams and, you know, creating mass market distribution, etc. You have an excellent reputation inside the Vodafone world. You are making this daring move, you know, to leave your country, to move to Qatar. You're bringing your family. You are in that period of 6 months, and then essentially you are laid off. Yeah, that is incredibly disruptive to that individual's career journey. I mean, very obvious, right? And we should value that person took that risk and took that decision to join the team. But the trouble was exactly what, funny enough, what you mentioned, is that individual was so driven by the result that he started stepping on other people in the business. So you need to bear in mind that a big goal for us in Qatar was also to create employment for local resources. This is what they call nationalization, or we called it Qatarization. And that individual that I'm referring to didn't really buy into the purpose at all or the values, and just started to apply the same recipe for success that he had in his country of origin. And that recipe of success, if I simplify, meant in sales, bullying people. Now, bullying people is not the same as creating a performance-led environment. Sales is tough, yeah? You know, maybe also a little bit of a rough tone and clear objectives and aggression are very healthy. But if you transgress into the kind of space of, you know, putting psychological pressure on people and you know, threatening people, bullying people, particularly, you know, local individuals in Qatar who were not performing as fast or, you know, in the same way this individual expected. I think his expectation was that the CEO would back up him. Essentially, that didn't happen, because the behavior, I think nowadays I realize why I'm talking, you know, it would be in 2023 considered as toxic anyways, yeah. But back in the days, you know, it wasn't, yeah. It was basically exactly what you said. You know, this was an experienced, tough person. You know, the only thing that counts in the end is how many SIM cards, you know, we would make. And the CEO, Graham Maher, eventually, in a respectful way, said, listen, reflect. Do you want to be here? Do you actually buy into, you know, what we are setting out to do here? And both of them actually concluded that that was not the case. I will use a strong word now, Dominic. That individual was a misfit. And not from a qualifications perspective at all, but for what the company wanted to do, for what we as a leadership team wanted to be known for, and even in retail and sales, what we wanted to create, he was the wrong person in this space. Now, what I will say is that Graham was mindful of the responsibility. So he actually was very open and very clear, gave the individual the chance to reflect, and in the end also helped within the Vodafone Group to find him a new job. But the decision was crystal clear. Misfit with the PVVS, eventually doesn't buy into the idea, behaves in an uncompliant manner, and therefore was laid off. And Graham then afterwards also always said, listen, you know, hiring also according to Vierklang model is a little bit like, you know, a love relationship. So you fall in love, you get engaged. But if eventually you see it doesn't work out, taking the responsible business decision is important, because if you accept that you have misfits in the environment, the Vierklang will never work. So, and honestly, I think also at the time the CEO wanted to send a signal that he was serious about implementing, and it's not just something that lives on the wall. So yes, in resourcing Dominic, but actually within the first 7 months, it also led to, honestly, a case of letting someone go despite the capabilities.
How important then, when I look at other organizations, how important is the involvement of a CEO and the whole leadership team in believing in the Vierklang?
Look, I think for me that's the driving factor, yeah. And I've seen it elsewhere where, you know, some consultant comes in, maybe you guys, or you know, there's some manager sees the Simon Sinek video and says, oh, you know, maybe reflecting on the why is a good idea. So, you know, we write it and we can refresh our vision and our mission. And then every now and then some HR person comes along, or some enthusiastic brand person. And once per year, you know, people talk about the purpose. Or yeah, listen, unless there's strong sponsorship by the CEO and the SLT, I would almost argue that it would be more sensible for businesses not to look into Vierklang, because if you just put it on a wall and you're inconsistent in the implementation, staff will get cynical. Yeah, because I mean, in the end, you're asking yourself, you know, what's this? Is this a schizophrenic environment? Yeah, we are saying this is why we exist. But in reality, the management only talks about EBITDA and revenue and not at all about the purpose or, you know, how we want to work as a company. So for me, CEO, SLT is essential. And I would actively advise leadership teams to consider not to do purpose, visions, you know, values and strategy, unless they really believe that this is something they want to see through, and that they want to, as I said, implement in every single aspect of the business. And I'm super happy if you want, I can talk in a minute about how we did this in marketing and propositions. But yeah, without CEO sponsorship, honestly, that doesn't have to be a bad business. But then I think being authentic as a leader and being authentic as an SLT is important, and having, I think, the consistency to say, you know, Vierklang is not for us, you know, fine. Yeah, I mean, that's okay. But I think having a half-baked implementation is a disaster, because it will have the reverse effect on the staff.
Absolutely. Jan, what you're saying is 100% what we say as well, right? We need the buy-in from the leadership team whenever we implement a Vierklang model. And on top of that, in the way we've set up Vierklang strategy coaching, is that we say we want the input of all the employees.
Yep.
Because exactly to prevent what you were saying, we don't want to get to a situation where you've got something on the website or something on a piece of paper, but where the organization actually lives it. And from a few of the people we've interviewed, we've heard how beneficial it was once the values were, you know, not just on paper, but were actually lived. The CEOs sometimes noticed that, hey, actually, I have to take less decisions because yep, the people who work in the business now actually ask the questions themselves. Is this new product or this new idea, yep, that we're having actually in line with our values? And if not, we don't even need to bring it to our superiors to make a decision on it, because we can make that decision because it is so clear right now. So thank you so much for bringing up that point. You know, that's exactly what it is all about, that we have it there. And then, of course, once we have the purpose, the vision and the values that you've already explained to us so wonderfully, then it's time to look into, okay, in alignment with all of these, what are now the strategies that get us to the place we want to have arrived at? You know, what were the strategies that got you to be the number one brand within 3 years?
So, like one of the strategies I can we already talked about, and it's mm-hmm. it's in context, of course, with the startup. The first one was to source a hot team. So the way we refer to this, maybe because it was a little bit of an Australia, New Zealand inspired environment, you know, build a hot team. So I'm not going to talk about that too much, but I think. The second one was building the best distribution model in the country, was of course obvious to grow, building an effective and efficient network, also quite obvious, and introducing a new, what we called Vodafone way, because we were bringing the global brand to a local environment. And let me talk about that part, the new Vodafone way, a little bit, because I think I can build on what you just said, Katrina. I mean, for us, it was very interesting, certainly for me as a marketeer, to be in that environment in 2008. I mean, you need to just maybe think about that for a moment. You know, that was before 4G, so we're like kind of a 3G environment, very voice-centric, and data services were emerging. BlackBerry was big, yeah. So in the Middle East, everyone was on BBM, BlackBerry Messenger. So what I guess today would be WhatsApp. And so we were looking into, okay, how can we really also with the little network that we had at the beginning? So there was no national roaming, so we needed to deal with the coverage that we had in the country. What difference could we make? And we had done a lot of analysis, obviously. And thanks to Vierklang, actually we stumbled on the business model that we basically didn't have, yeah. So no analysis from the Vodafone Group or actually us locally had indicated that. Let me talk about that a little bit. So I said already before that the incumbent, in the way they did marketing, in the way they did sales, and the way they did customer service, was very much geared towards only the locals, and we changed that. So referring back to the purpose, which was making a world of difference for all the people in Qatar, which of course include the Qatari, but everyone else, led to us, introducing English, Tagalog, Hindi, Urdu, so a total of 8 languages in terms of tactical marketing, and we really got under the skin of the segments. And if you think about these workers, and particularly in Qatar, I mean, their life was incredibly dull. Yeah, so take a Nepali security guard standing around all day, sending his money back home to Nepal. So fundamentally, incredibly boring, and the only kind of lifeline back home was the phone. Now, at the time, if you are in a monopoly environment, you know, pricing is not very effective. So the monopoly was, of course, enjoying great margin, but our competition had never done a revenue optimal pricing exercise. So I give you a feeling. International calls in 2008 in Qatar were 2 riyals 50, Qatari riyals, which is the equivalent of 50 cents, which essentially meant, in absence of voice over IP, that, 80% of the population, you know, could maximum call a few minutes home per week because they simply couldn't afford it. So going back to the purpose, making a world of difference for all of the people in Qatar, we said, okay, what's our cost situation like? And thanks to the Vodafone Group, we were able to get some really good wholesale costs for international calling. But that wasn't really a big market. It was a high margin market, but it was not a big volume market. So I, together with the team, said, okay, you know, if we launch, we might as well make it simple. So how about we actually really disrupt this? We have no revenues to cannibalize. So how about we take this 2 riyals 50 to 50 dirhams? Yeah. So essentially 10 cents, because we could. And what we stumbled up on is that our entire growth in these first couple of months then was not data driven, which was our strategy, yeah, because 5G, etc. But it became international traffic because we changed the life of these people. You know, suddenly they could call their parents, they could call their better half back home. And what actually happened is that the share of wallet that we had from a telecoms perspective was so much greater than the competition. So we were actually building a new market. So not only we make a big difference because their livelihood changed, but we actually stumbled on a market that the competition, because it was a monopoly, had never really understood. So actually what on the back of that happened in that segment is that both operators actually grew in that area. And even now, Qatar has a much higher share of traditional voice calling than voice over IP, because pricing for international calling is very effective. And I'm 100% convinced, Katrin, that unless or without Vierklang, without that context, without that framework, we would never have gone down that route, but we would have been much more careful in terms of trial and error on the pricing, and we most likely would have struggled with a suboptimal network and, you know, not ideal 3G data speeds, and the growth that we have seen from revenue, that fast growth wouldn't have materialized. So honestly, back to your point, I the Vierklang, if it's relevant, it makes business sense.
That sounds brilliant. And what a way to change the lives of the people in the market, right? So wonderful example of bringing that Vierklang together, and Vierklang as a German name is like four notes that individually might be dull, but once it all comes together, it's actually music you're making, right? So beautiful example. Jana, I could, like, we could talk to you for the next 2 hours. Certainly, there's so many great stories in what you're saying. Now, one thing that's really triggered my interest, I think our interest in the beginning that you were saying before we wrap up. So how on earth do you build rapport with the sheikhs?
Okay. So look, I mean, how do I do it now here in Oman is a completely different secret. And but I can tell you about Graham, certainly, or about the first touch points I've had with the culture back in 2008. And I think, you know, being again mindful and consistent in terms of what you want to achieve is really important, because then as a leader, you can also portray not only your own style, but also the brand. And what Graham used to do is break with a lot of different stereotypes of a CEO, and that created an enormous ripple effect and chatter in the country. So a few examples. One is, he exclusively flew economy class, and people used to see him. He would drive the smallest branded car that we would have available. So this was, I think, a Peugeot branded. Yeah. And within weeks and months, everybody in the country talked about this. And when I joined him on a couple of trips, you know, we would get out into the big mansions outside of Doha, and, you know, we would follow the local customs. I think guiding principle for Graham and for me was first and foremost respect, of course. Yeah, so making sure you are aware of the local customs, following the local customs. Some of them were quite awkward, and the first time I saw, you know, Graham doing that, that was a big adventure. So the Qataris, they are kissing each other here on the nose level, and so Graham had been practicing that. So I think the aspect of surprise that came when you know, the Qataris found out that he was well aware of you know, what would be customary during a first visit, who you would talk to, that made a big difference. But again, I think these building this personal brand and being really clear on the purpose also made a big difference. I will share one story, if I may, which is not directly linked to the purpose, but which I will never forget, and that actually has to do also with you know, the code of conduct. We were developing a relationship with one of the key players there from a distribution viewpoint, and so Graham had been at an event with that individual the day before, and suddenly I was just sitting in the open space office. CEO walks up and says, "Jan, do you have 4 hours?" I said, "Like, sure, 4 hours." So before I know it, we are sitting in this small Peugeot and we are driving through, let's say, the desert. And I said, like, "Graham, you know, what's going on?" And he said, "No, listen, there's a little bit of a problem. Yesterday, you know, we have been doing an event and I was presented with a watch." I said, "Oh." I said, "Yes, oh." And I actually, in front of the sheikh, I couldn't humiliate him. So I took the watch and I said, "Oh." He said, "Yes. So what we will do now, without all of the crowd that there was yesterday, we will go back to the sheikh, and Jan, you will play the German internal affairs person. So basically, you will say that you are from the Vodafone Group and that this is non-compliant with standards, and that you are forcing me, you know, to return the watch." And I was like, "This is incredibly smart," because in that moment when it was about rapport building and following customs, and I also know it from Oman, you know, presenting gifts as a sign of, you know, relationship building and trust, it's just customary. Yeah. So you cannot necessarily immediately apply the same rules as elsewhere. So he took me as a witness. It took an hour to get there. It took an hour to wait for the Sheikh to come. It was lots of drama. I put on my best German accent. So here, I'm here to control Mr. Graham. He has to, this watch is unacceptable. So, you know, honestly, incredible. But for Graham at the time to take the decision, not to humiliate the Sheikh during the night before, but then to be really clear, and he was, and we put it in writing, that a Vodafone employee would never accept gifts of any kind, certainly not exceeding significant value. I just thought this was incredibly smart. And again, also aided to his reputation, and it was 100% compliant with the guidelines, because fundamentally the gift was never accepted. This was in 2009. It's a smart rapport building, eh? But a crazy adventure.
Absolutely brilliant, right? And it shows how he lived up to the values that the business also incorporated, right? So
yep.
All the examples you've just given us, it is worldliness. It's about knowing, you know, what the customs are. It's about meeting people where they are. It's about respecting certain traditions while staying authentic and truthful to the values we've set to ourselves within our business, and certainly compliance, as we know, is a big one.
Indeed.
Right. And then approaching it from a can-do attitude, right? So these are the circumstances. How are we going to get out of this in a way that preserves the respect and kind of like the standing of every person involved? So beautiful way. Thank you so much for sharing that, Jan.
Welcome.
Fantastic. I think with that, we're coming to the end of our podcast, and I am sure you've got so many more stories. We might just bring you back for a second episode at some point.
Anytime. Of course.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Jan, for sharing all these stories with us. It's been beautiful to have you here, and we wish you all the best and look forward to talking to you again soon.
That's it for today with Vierklang Strategy Coaching in our Chief of Anything podcast. If you would like to discover the impact of Vierklang Strategy Coaching for your company, then simply click on the link in the description and get in touch with us.